This is the Guitar Noise Podcast, episode 27. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Noise Podcast. Today I talk to Canadian guitar player Nick Johnston. Nick's album In a Locked Room on the Moon made my top albums of 2013 list on Guitar Noise and includes guest appearances from Guthrie Govan and Paul Gilbert. I caught up with Nick to talk about his two solo albums and what we can expect to see from Nick in 2014. Thanks for joining me today on the Guitar Noise Podcast.
Hey buddy, how's it going?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good. I just finished up a long day of teaching, so it's nice to just get to relax and have a chat, man.
Is that something that you do like pretty much every day? Do you have to do a lot of teaching, or is it something that you just do as part-time?
It's changed a lot over the last, geez, I want to say 6 or 7 years. I'm 26 now, and I basically started teaching right out of high school. And for years there, I was doing 6 days a week. This was actually quite a bit before I put out my first album. So this is going back, probably when I was 20 or 21.
Yeah.
And I was teaching out of a store. It was great. I mean, for, you know, a young kid who wanted to kind of get into the music industry somehow, even if it was just, you know, teaching guitar, it was amazing. But it just became so draining. It turns into work, right? It starts like really fun, and then it just kind of just becomes like a factory. But now I teach privately, and I try and keep it to about 2 days. So in between, you know, gigs or the odd guitar clinic, or you know, just writing or recording, I get out there, and I get to teach the people who want to be there, as opposed to, you know, getting kids come in and they're there because their parents want them to be the next Eric Clapton or something. Yeah. And it's great, man. Just, you know, I get to go, and it's great too because I go from house to house, so I get that extra bit of time in between lessons to, you know, listen to music or grab a coffee or something. So yeah, it's cool.
And Do the people that you teach actually, are they people that have found out about you through your albums?
Since a lot of it's relatively local, you know, maybe the farthest away I'd go is an hour. A lot of them are either students I had had in the past and wanted to kind of continue after I left teaching at, you know, like a school or an institution. It's funny. I have a couple now that found out about me through just chance on YouTube. They saw, like, you know, new album featuring Paul Gilbert, and I'll get an email and like, holy shit, man, you did an album and had Paul around there, like, and you live like 20 minutes away from me, like. And it's funny when you know, something like that happens. It's the last thing you expect, especially in Canada. You know, it's like, how many people in Canada even know what the instrumental guitar music is? But I guess it's kind of just a combination. It's weird. I really wish I could find out exactly how to do it, but it's totally random sometimes.
And you're based, you said, in Canada. So whereabouts in Canada are you?
I'm in southern Ontario. So I'd say about an hour west, 45 minutes west of Toronto.
There's a decent music scene in Toronto area, or do you have to travel a bit further afield to get sort of see the music that you liked growing up?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to go and see a show, it's definitely all happening in Toronto. Like, I got a chance to hang out with, like, you know, Guthrie and Marco Miniman, because they came and played at, like, a club with Stephen Wilson, and you know, I saw Satriani a couple months ago. Like, pretty big names come through in the guitar world.
Yeah.
But it's maybe once every, you know, 2 years they'll come through. So it's not great, but it's good. As far as anywhere else goes, there's a smaller town called Guelph that I live near, and it's more so local stuff, and it's a lot of singer songwriter stuff. So
yeah,
you know, I can only take so much of that. Yeah. I guess music's kind of all around. It's just tough to sometimes find something you really, really into.
Yeah. Your first and your second album, they have quite a distinctive sound. So you're not the typical, what I would call an instrumental guitar player that I would probably expect. When I hear an instrumental guitar record, I immediately, and this is probably bad on my part, but I immediately think it's going to be, you know, a metal, rock, shred, all out kind of,
yeah.
You know, like it's almost a display of technique. Whereas your albums, and especially In a Locked Room on the Moon, the latest album, I found was very diverse in styles. So what did you listen to growing up before you started writing your own music to give you that kind of mixture of different styles?
Yeah, you know, it's really cool that you know, when we first talked about that record, like back in, I forget when that was some time ago, but
yeah,
it was really cool. You noticed that kind of right away, just in terms of variation and just, you know, influence and stuff like that with the tunes. I didn't really listen to any guitar music until, you know, I was much, much older. Growing up, it was a lot of rock. But when I say guitar music, I mean, there's obviously guitar in the music, but it wasn't like the featured instrument. And even if it was the featured instrument, I wouldn't have really paid attention. Actually, it's funny. I remember my dad showed me Big Bad Moon and Flying in a Blue Dream.
Yeah.
Way before I ever played guitar. And like, I just remember humoring him, being like, yeah, this is great. You know, I was like 12 or something. I didn't want anything to do with the guitar, but you know, I listened to there's always like Black Sabbath or Alice Cooper or, you know, just a lot of 70s kind of classic rock stuff, which I still really, really love because, you know, it comes from a nostalgic place for me. But, as far as the different styles go, I played in a group where I had to play rhythm guitar for a lot of styles I had never even touched. You know, like we were playing some Latin stuff, some kind of more Mediterranean stuff. There was some tango music and some waltz stuff and gypsy and, you know, just a lot of harmony and rhythm I'd never really even, you know, approached, and I was shocked that I even got a chance to play in it because I was so bad at all that stuff. But, you know, doing it enough, I just kind of developed this different weird approach to instrumental music because it was all instrumental music. Typically, when you get an instrumental musician, yeah, you're saying, you know, they'll be doing their best licks or their fastest playing or their most technical playing all the time. There's never really an off switch.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
Because we played in a band where it was, you know, we had to play at, you know, like anything from like a house party to like a corporate function to, you know, a wedding, like you don't want to just be playing guitar solos the whole time. So melody and rhythm and variation, like when you're playing at a wedding, for example, you don't just want to have the same rhythm for like 3-4 hours. You know, you want people to be able to dance slow. You want to be able to fast. You want like song with a straight kind of, you know, pulse right down the middle. And that really influenced me, just to see people's reaction to rhythm. Like it's the strongest force in music, right? Like it's what causes you to tap your foot even if you don't realize it. And it just kind of seeps in, you know, you do it and you keep doing it and next thing you know, you got like a weird tango track, and then you have a reggae track, and then you got something that sounds gypsy, and you don't know what the hell is going on, but like you like it. And also, I was massively into, and still am into, like film soundtracks and, you know, film scores and film composers and a lot of classical music. And I was always so excited and like, I don't even know what the word is, entranced by, you know, hearing these specific harmonies that, and I don't mean like, you know, a harmony between a root and a third. I mean like melody in relation to chords. You hear specific harmony in film scores that you don't ever hear anywhere else, you know? And I always wanted to know what the hell was going on. So by studying that, and not in a school or with a teacher, it was very much on my own. By studying that, that even entered into my kind of, you know, rock background. And all of a sudden, you know, you get a guy playing electric guitar who, you know, still loves the pentatonic scale and all that good stuff, mixed with, you know, Lydian dominant or like, you know, secondary dominant chord substitutions and tritone substitutes. And it just turns into like this completely different thing. Not that I'm the only one doing it, but I'm not necessarily influenced by maybe too many other guitar players in that respect. It's more so like film composers or, you know, classical music and stuff like that. So yeah, long story short, I think I play it's important to play what's natural to you. And I think that's the stuff I want to hear.
That's cool. That kind of sums up the two albums. The fact that you've played in this band that has a diverse number of styles that you covered, and the fact that you love soundtracks, because you only have to look at the cover art of both albums and you can see that something's going on. And then looking into your website, I found that, and from reading about on Facebook or whatever, I could see that you're obviously into comics. And that sort of also for me sort of describes that album. It's a soundtrack, and it's got this quirky kind of look to it. It's more of a soundtrack than it is individual tracks.
Yeah.
Like it's a journey through different styles, and you've got all this crazy sort of surf rock and something that I probably incorrectly, I think I described one of the tracks as like having this sort of polka sound to it when I reviewed.
I think that's totally accurate.
I love that track because it's just, you'd never expect to hear like a polka instrumental guitar track.
You know, it's funny too, like with a lot of that stuff, I find that, you know, the way that, especially the second album goes, it kind of shows my personality in a sense that I'm a very kind of hesitant, and I can't really make up my mind. You know, I'm very indecisive, and I couldn't decide on what I thought would be, you know, I probably wrote 30 or 40 tracks or something for...
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, that's my main thing. I love just kind of writing music. And, you know, some of the stuff that didn't make it, maybe I didn't think it would sound good with, you know, the other stuff. So it's like, maybe I'll do something with the other stuff later. But,
yeah,
you know, having, especially, you know, you listen to the first two tracks, like it starts off with that Evil Stepsister, which has kind of got that tango pulse to it. And then it's got more of a Latin vibe in the chorus. And then you go to the second track, Deepest Breath, which is basically more like, it's more like almost like a Japanese kind of pop song, with that, you know, up-tempo kind of chorus and just the harmony. And then I think it goes into like Trick Question or something like that. And it's like a blues tune. It's very much, it just, to me, it says, you know, that's my personality. I'm just all over the place. I'm a complete disaster sometimes, you know?
To me, it reminds me of like a Tarantino movie, how you don't just have a set style of songs all the way through. He just finds these little gems of different sort of styles throughout the ages and whatever.
It's funny you say Tarantino. I've gotten that exact comparison more than anything, which is amazing for me because no one says you sound like, you know, enter your guitar name here.
Yeah,
it's more you sound like this should be in a Tarantino film or movie film, and that's awesome because no one's saying you sound like you're a bad Joe Satriani. but it's cool to hear that, you know, it's very cool.
So the latest album, obviously you did have a couple of big name guests, as you mentioned earlier. You got Paul Gilbert, Guthrie Govan. Must have been a big draw for you, for obviously from fans on YouTube who've shared around your videos and whatever. So how did those come about? Did you know Paul and Guthrie, or did you just approach them to do work on the album?
Yeah, you know, I get asked quite a bit about that, just because of, you know, who they are and how many people, you know, grew up listening to them and just basically how friggin' awesome they are. Basically, I knew with Guthrie, I knew someone who was kind of like my, I don't want to say manager, but who was, you know, helping me out with a lot of booking and press and stuff at the time. And
yeah.
He knew someone that used to manage Guthrie, and I had some contact info come up because of that. And then, I basically just, you know, I thought, I got nothing to lose, man. Let's just see what happens. It's interesting. They typically listen to most stuff they're sent. Paul probably took a notice to my stuff maybe because I already had Guthrie on board and Paul had worked with Guthrie at the time. So I'm sure Paul gets like 1,000 to 10,000 emails a day of people sending him music. So it was probably luck of the draw. But I find with guys like that, you know, they're so good and they've been around guitar for the better part of their life. They don't care if you send them super technical music. They don't care how fast you can play or how much, you know, technique you have. That's the last thing they care about because they can already do that stuff. What those guys are looking for is music. You know, they want something that's going to say, you know, this is me. It's like my personality. I'm not trying to copy anyone.
Yeah.
Especially a guy like Paul, like if you listen to any of his solo stuff, I mean, not the solo guitar stuff. I mean, like the, you know, the records like Flying Dog or Burning Organ and Alligator Farm, a lot of that stuff is vocal based. And that just says to you, it's like Paul loves, you know, he loves melody, and guy, he preaches about how much he used to love the beat or how much he loves the Beatles. And,
yeah.
And, you know, you take a song that I sent him to your question, that song, it's 100%, it's melody, right? It's all, well, the whole album is all melody. And even Guthrie, like the tune he played on Electric in My Veins, it's like, it's not like a shred tune. I mean, the guitar playing when we're playing back and forth, you know, that's just fun. It's just like, I want to have fun with this, you know? So that's a little bit more shred based kind of stuff. But the tune itself, it's, you know, it's very melodic. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff these guys, they're into, because they're constantly bombarded with, you know, praise as being a guitar hero, or, you know, hey, show me your craziest licks, you know? And it's tiring. You know, the fact that they even played on my instrumental stuff, I still don't understand how the hell I pull it off, but, you know, I'm extremely, and I said that to Paul, you know, tons of times, like I'm extremely grateful. You know, if you ever need anything in return, man, like, you know, it was amazing that you even did that for me. Same with Guthrie. It's incredible.
Yeah.
But,
Paul especially is such a nice guy. I haven't met or had the chance to speak to Guthrie myself yet, but yeah. I interviewed Paul. One of my first podcasts actually was with Paul Gilbert, and I've been a fan of his since I started playing guitar. So back in the late 80s, I used to go and see Mr. Big. And he's so down to earth. And I went along to a clinic recently, and he just played and sang. Like, he didn't play instrumental stuff at all, really. Everything he did was a song. And I think a lot of people in the room were like, whoa, he can sing.
Yeah, I know. Like, these guys, they get to a point where it's like they just don't, you know, enough is enough sometimes, right? Like, I mean, I've been playing for 12 years and I already feel like that sometimes. It's like, you know, it's not all about how fast you can play or how many licks. It's about, you know, you as an individual and music and you know, enjoying yourself. And I think they maybe picked up on that a little bit from my stuff. I mean, Paul, I think he had got back to me after I sent him the music. He got back to me within an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable. I mean, I was driving to a gig when I got the email, and I had to pull over. Like, I had to pull. I couldn't process. You know, I was like, oh, and I had the guitar player I was playing at the time was in the car with me. I was like, Paul Gilbert's playing on my album. He's just like, what? What? And then, it was mind blowing, man. I don't even know, to be honest with you. I'm just assuming, I guess, you know, for them, it's not so much about technique or notes or, you know, whatever. It's just more so about, is this musical and can I take something away from this that I'm going to be happy with, you know?
I wonder if he'd been following you on YouTube, because Paul is a big fan of YouTube, and he often finds and other guitar players, like Sam Coulson, for example, from the UK. He found him playing some pretty cool demos, and then he invited him over to the US for a workshop or something.
Yeah, that's right. I talked to Sam every so often. He was mentioning that. As far as I know, because I talked just briefly through email about that with Paul, and he said he'd seen just about everything I'd put up, which was close to 100 videos at the time.
Oh my god.
I know, it's like, geez, Paul, come on, man. I can't be good in every one of those videos. But maybe he was just kind of being silly about that. But he'd seen a lot of that. But I guess, it makes sense, right? He doesn't just want to get into something that, a guy like that, his name is pretty, it's pretty reputable. So he doesn't just want to be getting in. I don't know. I'm just assuming. I don't mean to sound like being cocky or anything, of course.
Well, I can't remember the last album that Paul Gilbert guest soloed on. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I think the last record he did with a collaboration was that United States album he did with I can't remember his name, Freddie. That's gonna drive me crazy. he did a collaboration album, and it was amazing.
That was years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. That was a killer. I don't know why they didn't do a second one, but you can
Freddie Nelson. That's it.
Freddie Nelson.
I had to look it up for you. Sorry.
Yeah, he has an amazing voice too. That guy is super talented. But I don't know. I just lucked out, and it's great. I still get a chance. We still kind of correspond, and I send him new tracks all the time, and he listens to them, which is great. And he gives me feedback, and he's an amazing person, and I'm really hoping to get a chance to hang out with him at NAMM this year.
Are you playing at NAMM for doing any on any booths or anything?
Yeah, I got Seymour Duncan. They invited me down, and I'm going to be playing the first first 3 days. I'm going to be playing at the booth on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah. So I got about, it's real short. It's like 15, 20 minutes, but I don't even care,
Yeah.
They're bringing me down, and I'm just blown away. It's my first time, and I don't know what to expect at all, but that's cool.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about Seymour Duncan. Obviously, you used their pickups. I wanted to just touch on gear sort of briefly.
Sure, man.
I've noticed, obviously, in your videos, you love Fender Strats. Is there a particular model that you're playing at the moment, or are you working on anything as a sort of a custom for yourself, or are you just lay off the shelf Fenders?
Well, I'll kind of go through a little bit of a timeline for you to explain.
Yeah, sure.
How I got to this point. So when I first started playing, I was 14, and I got a red Squire Bullet, and it was just the most amazing guitar. Or so I thought at the time. I loved the crap out of that guitar. And then for, I think it was Christmas, like 2 years after that, I got a ice blue metallic. I still remember the color of a Mexican Fender Stratocaster.
Yeah.
And that was the guitar I developed pretty well most, if not all, of my technique on. And everything just kind of, it just kind of clicked in that little bit of time there. So I just basically kind of grew around that guitar, So I became very accustomed to the Fender set, like the single coil. Like I didn't realize I was like picking a little harder to get those single coils to pop more. And, the neck was the neck on a Mexican Strat's not the best neck. So, your hand kind of learns to make it work. And then I remember a couple of years later, I bought a Carvin guitar. It was too much for me. It was like, active pickup, like friggin' like you could launch a nuclear missile from it. It had so many switches on it. It was crazy, and the neck was so flat, and it was a beautifully made guitar. It was an amazing guitar if you like that type of thing. But I sold it, and then I bought a Telecaster when I was 20, and then I love that guitar so much because it completely changed the way I play, because I'd been using a Floyd was it a Floyd Rose? Yeah, it was a Floyd Rose on the Carbon.
Yeah.
And I got so used to using that that I didn't like it. You know, I was like relying on the whammy bar to make myself sound like I knew what I was doing. So I went to a Telecaster and it was like no Floyd, no active pickups. You know, you got one volume knob, three-way switch, tone knob. Good luck, you know, see what you can do. And that was amazing for me. So then after that, I bought a Sonic Blue Custom Classic, and I was about 21 or so. And that was the guitar that got me back to playing Strats.
Right.
And I still play that guitar, you know, every day, every other day. I teach with it. But then it was funny because I was teaching so much. I was making pretty decent money. So that same year, I bought like three custom shop Fender guitars.
Nice.
I was spending all my money on guitars. And then a year later, I had custom ordered the guitar at the time, which was a custom deluxe because they had discontinued the classic.
Hmm.
I wanted an Inca Silver one, but they were like, yeah, we don't have that guitar. So I had to wait about a year for it. And that's been my main guitar since I got it.
Right.
And, you know, I have nothing against, you know, an American Standard Strat or anything. I think those are incredible guitars. But I just, you know, happened to get spoiled by buying and, you know, collecting for a little while the custom shop guitars. And you know, I like I said, I would be more than happy to play an American Standard. But the fact is I have... You know, these custom shop guitars. And I mean, they're not custom spec. They're just like the typical custom shop, like the standard model.
Yeah.
And they're just the greatest guitars, man. I just love them. And I feel, you know, like myself when I'm playing one. And yeah, if I could continue just to play that guitar, that'd be all I need.
And you're using standard single coils in those, the Seymour Duncans, or are they stacked?
Well, for the first, you know, several years, I wasn't endorsing anything, so I was just using the whatever came with the guitars, the Fender pickups, which they're the 60 cycle hum, you know, driver engineer wild kind of thing with the. But then, yeah, you know, I've got some stuff I'm trying. I got in one guitar, I have the Liberator pickup, which has like some of those vintage hot pickups. They're not super hot. They are noise canceling. And then in one guitar, I've got the rail, three different rail pickups.
Yeah.
Which are cool. Yeah. I'm not used to that at all, but I thought I'd try something different and just kind of see what happens. You know, sometimes having a different tone can inspire you to write something different, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
So I have that going on in one guitar, and I want to actually get some Yngwie Fury pickups. I want to try those out. Those seem pretty cool.
They do, yeah. I've seen some nice demos of those on YouTube. They sound pretty amazing.
They sound great. Yeah, Seymour, you know, Seymour Duncan's such an awesome company too. Like, you know, a lot of times people just, yeah, the company I'm working with is amazing, but these guys, like, they're incredible. You know, like they really give a shit what I, you know, have to say, and I get to talk to some of the top guys in the company, and you know, they're, for some reason, they decided to bring me down to NAMM to play, and you know, it's been amazing getting a chance to talk and work with these guys. So, you know, and plus their stuff sounds great, so it's a win-win situation.
Well, Seymour Duncan seemed to be very active. They work extreme. Very closely with artists, and they're very sort of a bit more forward thinking. Some of the other, I won't go naming other companies, but there's another big pickup company that sort of used to be the big name for everyone.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to do as much kind of talking to the people, you know what I mean? They don't engage with customers so much or with artists so much.
Yeah, I've heard that too from other former users of their materials. Not, you know, I think they make amazing stuff too, but it's like the person I want to work with is the person who wants to work with me, you know.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. I don't want to feel like I'm privileged, you know. I just want to feel like I'm comfortable there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
so also, you just mentioned you've now got a Friedman amp. So yeah, that's like that's the HBE amp, is it? Or
yeah, it's the that's the HBE 100. Yeah,
and yeah, so Dave Friedman, obviously, for people who don't know, he is a bit of a legend in the amp, and he also runs, is it Rack Systems?
Yeah, exactly.
So he puts together racks for people like Steve Lukather and all these big names over in Hollywood, I think he's based. And yep. Yeah, so he's been making amps for a long time now, hasn't he? And the HBE is sort of the big, what do you call it, like modded plexi that everybody
raves about. It's just a monster. I'll tell you how I kind of got hooked up with Friedman. When I was, this was last January, basically to the day, John, to the day, last January, I went down to Maryland to Taylor Larson's studio, who did, he did a lot of the work with Periphery on their second record.
Right.
And I went to the studio with just my Strat, and he told me he had this amp. It was a Friedman amp, and I had never really heard about it. And it looked like a Marshall, but with a different logo on it, basically, until I played it. And it was just ridiculous, So that album I did with the HBE was, HBE is the, I should explain, the BE is the actual amp, but there's two channels, the brown eye and then the hairy brown eye, which is kind of like the extra, you know, rip your face off kind of setting on the amp. So I guess the proper term would be when I use the BE, I didn't need any pedals. I didn't need any effects or anything special. It was just plug right into the amp, put a mic in front of the cabinet and start recording. And that is exactly what we did. And I was extremely happy with the tone we got. It's still pretty raw sounding, and I like that, not overly processed or fake sounding. You know, I'm not a big Axe FX guy, so I like, you know, the amp pushing air and stuff like that. So this amp, it just seemed to, seemed to kind of, it sounded too cheesy, kind of, you know, speak to me. And I got in touch with them like the night of. I was like, what is going on with this amp? You know, can we talk about, you know, trying to do something? And, you know, I need this amp. I want this to be my sound. You know, I want the Strat with this amp to be, you know, to be my sound. So I got one. And I'm going to be doing everything with it. You know, it's the next record I'm going to do with it. And any chance I get to use it, it's going to be used. It's just a monster, man. There's nothing else you can say.
So you just mentioned you saw this for the first time when you were at a studio. And did you say that was where the Periphery were recording their latest?
Oh, well, no, that's where they did their, Periphery 2.
Oh, where they did Periphery 2, okay.
Yeah, but Spencer and the singer and Matt, the drummer, they do a lot of their, either demos or they do some cover stuff for Sumerian. And I think they did the two tunes that they wrote for Clear, they did at that studio. So, yeah, they're really good buddies with Taylor, and, you know, Taylor's an awesome guy. So, and he's got a killer studio, and he's, like, got this amazing... He's got this amazing ear. You know, he's one of the most talented people I know.
Can we just talk briefly about Clear as well? Because we spoke about it off air a few minutes ago. But
sure, man.
So while you were there, you got chatting, is this right, to Spencer, the singer from Periphery, and he asked you to do a guest solo on his track for the new album for Clear.
Yeah, so it's a little... that's a little out of order. I'll just try kind of. No problem. So I had gone down there and I had just basically finished recording the last, little bit for the album. And Taylor said, hey, so, you know, my friend's going to come by, Spencer from Periphery. And I didn't know too much Periphery stuff. I'd heard like some of their more well, like I heard Icarus Lives or.
Yeah.
I think I heard Jetpacked or something like that. And yeah, I was like, oh, these guys are pretty cool. So Spencer came by and he's, you know, we're kind of similar in a couple different respects. Like we love a lot of the same music and movies and, you know, comics and video games and worked into sci-fi and B-movie stuff. So he really liked what I was doing. And, you know, I think when I had gotten home, about a week after that, he sent me an email. He's like, hey, do you want to do this project with me? It's called The Mothership. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. So he sent me like a bunch of tracks. I can't remember, like maybe 6, 7, or 8. And I did, you know, a bunch of demo work for it. But Periphery was, you know, they were doing quite well last year. You know, I guess they had done, you know, constant touring. And then they were doing Summer Slaughter. And then they had the headlining tour. And
yeah,
they were just super, super busy. So he said to me, you know, do you want to do, this is back in August. He said, do you want to do a guest solo for this upcoming project we have? And I was like, of course, absolutely. So, I did it. It's about a week after, and this was back in September, and it turned out, yeah, it turned out great. His tune is, it's extremely catchy, and it's very different from a kind of a typical Periphery song. So I'm really happy with it. Yeah, it's great.
I'm looking forward to hearing that album, just because it's not a Periphery album as such, is it? It's like they're all doing their own thing and putting it together.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I like that.
It's cool. Yeah, I like that too. I like that everyone gets their equal time to shine and their equal say in it. That's a cool band that would let you do
that. And that they all have their own things going on too. Like Jake Bowen's got his own instrumental album coming out, and Nolly is just like this unbelievable producer, and they're crazy talented, a lot of them.
They are. You know, it's funny, like Maryland, that whole area, so much stuff came out of it. Came into that area for metal. Like it was like a hot spot for the longest time. So many great records and so many great musicians just kind of came from there. And I just happened to kind of be, let's be honest here. I was right place at the right time. Cause I'm not a metal musician, but I guess, it was just, it's one of those cases of right place at the right time. And, you know, plus, you know, we got along really well, so.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, you know, yeah. Another guitar player could have been there at the same time and it wouldn't have happened. So it's
totally,
just
man.
The fact that you had that connection.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's something to be said too about, you know, getting along with, you know, what kind of movies and what kind of stuff you're into, because it's so easy to talk to people, you know, when you share a common interest like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and there's no egos involved. You can tell that anyway from Periphery, and, you know, from chatting to you, you can tell how sort of, you know, laid back you are, and how they seem to be in the sort of same boat. Then there's no egos at all with them, even though they're getting quite big now.
Yeah, that's what's another really cool thing about them, you know, is they're not untouchable, in a sense that, you know, they're just as much in touch with their fans as they were when they first started, you know.
And, well, exactly, that's how they actually got famous, really, from constantly sharing music. You know, Misha was always posting stuff as Bulb, and you know,
absolutely,
on forums all the time, sharing his production techniques with people. And it's kind of like he's forged a way in the music industry in a way that wasn't really thought of how you did it before, you know. He didn't,
oh man,
it's not absolutely the non-traditional kind of method, but he's made it work by working really hard to make sure he's, you know, engaging with people on a level.
Yeah, Misha's opened the door for like so many musicians, man. He's gotten so many people like where they are now. He's like Walmart, man. He's gotten like so many jobs for people. Yeah, he's like completely he's completely changed the game, and you know, if he's remembered for anything, it might be that. Like, he's not to mention, you know, how great Periphery is and how much, you know, they've contributed, but like just Misha for what he's done for so many musicians, you know.
But I mean, also out of necessity, really. I mean, the music industry is kind of in a state of massive change over the last,
of
I suppose,
course,
10 years or whatever. And have you found that you've had to look into different ways of promotion and different ways to get your music out there in order to sort of, you know, forge ahead?
Yeah. I mean, right now, and I could be wrong with this, but it just seems like the main style for what's going on right now, especially instrumental, is like that kind of progressive djent kind of 7 or 8 string style music. And I'm not doing that. And it, you know, it it hurts, you know, kind of like monetarily it hurts sometimes, because that's what I'm doing, is it's not, you know, it's not really the thing people gravitate towards right now. So, you know, it's interesting to try and find a way to still, you know, stay on people's radar. And I don't know, I think the main thing is, for me, I'm just trying to persevere with doing what I do, you know, and because I'm the only one who can do what I do, much like how, you know, anybody else is the only person that can do what they do. So you try and just, you stick to what you know, you stick to what you're good at, and you know, you just hope that people like it. And you know, as far as writing different music or trying to play a different style or anything like that, it's hard for me because, you know, I'm not good at that. You know, I'm kind of just good at, you know, the first thing I think of, which is not metal. So things like, you know, Facebook or YouTube, or those are the two big ones. And you try and stay active and you try and get back to fans, if you have any fans, as much as possible. And the big thing though is just anything you put out, any product or anything you put your name on, you do the best job you can. You make it look the best. You try and have a look or an image or something going on that's gonna help you create a name for yourself in the industry, like you said, that's consistently changing and consistently, you know, moving on to the next big thing. And you just don't want to get left behind, you know. It's an absolute like rat race sometimes, and it's very dizzying. And to be honest with you, it gets pretty draining sometimes. But again, you know, this is the only thing I know how to do, so I do the best I can with, you know, whatever knowledge. And another thing too is, like, I don't have management or label or agents or, you know, whatever. I do everything. I do everything from, you know, uploading of videos to, you know, getting the album printed to packaging it to mailing it by hand.
Yeah.
You know, I'm booking the gigs, you know, taxes, like I do everything. So, you know, you have to just do the best you can. And I think if you stay positive and just kind of remember why you got into it in the first place, then, you know, it's not so bad.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good point to end on. We've been talking for quite a while, so it's probably, wrap this up. So for anyone, if I can get this up before NAMM, for anyone that is attending NAMM, you can catch Nick Johnston at the Seymour Duncan stand or the booth. So, yeah. Check the timings with Seymour Duncan. I'm sure they'll have a board up at NAMM show to tell what time everyone's on.
Yeah, for sure.
And apart from that, you're playing local gigs, are you? Or are you actually, do you get to play any of your solo stuff live, or do you just play in a band locally?
Yeah, I do. I actually have a couple different bands I'm playing in. Well, a couple different versions of what I do. I have the electric band, and then I do, much like I used to do with that other band I was talking about before, I do acoustic versions of everything, which has got like a different spin on it. So we do that all over the place. But yeah, I'm going to be doing some traveling in the new year. So hopefully some people can get a chance to come out from wherever you are to check it out.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Nick, for joining me today on the podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Anytime.
And yeah, all the best for 2014. You're my first interview of this year.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks very much, Nick.
Ciao, John.
You can follow Nick Johnston at his website, nickjohnstonmusic.com, and over at Facebook at facebook.com/nick.johnston.90. Thanks for listening. And remember, you can follow Guitar Noise on Twitter at Guitar Noise. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/guitarnoise. You can also find Guitar Noise on Google+, and of course at the website guitarnoise.com. And remember, it's Guitar Noise with a Z.